the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome back in for another edition of the Battleground State Report. As always, go to BattlegroundStateNews.com, BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web. Also, Battleground State News on Facebook as well, where you'll find links to some of the stories that we talk about each weekend. And a lot of stuff, of course, happens in between our radio show. So you can find all those details and stories linked up there and stay up to date as we continue to focus on the 2020 election that's already underway and the states that will determine who wins and who loses.
Yeah, and really, 20 states are going to be red no matter who the candidates are. 13 states are going to be blue no matter who the candidates are. So they're already, you can already count their electoral college votes for the respective candidates. It's these 17 states, I'm going to tell you right now, are the ones that are in play that could go either way. And in the Midwest, we're talking about Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. In the West, it's Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. In the South, Florida, North Carolina, Virginia. And in New England, it's Maine and New Hampshire. Those 17 states are where the 2020 presidential election will be determined. And each of those states have unique local issues that are going to influence the presidential vote. And it's those local issues that we'll be talking about on this program.
You know, and as you look at some of the issues just this last week that will impact, particularly in those battleground states, you've got the Democrats pushing killing babies, raising taxes to 70% to 90% rates, not securing our borders, wiping out the private insurance industry with a Medicare for All plan that as Kamala Harris says, would eliminate private health insurance for 150 million Americans. Doug, they're laying out a groundswell of issues that Republicans ought to be applauding in terms of what it's going to do to move voters away from them.
You mean that was only in the last week? Wow. they've been rather busy. You know, one of the things, too, I mean, you mentioned, and Michael did, about, you know, the fact that there are local issues that are involved in this. One of the stories that really shocked me and bothered me this week, and we don't have that included in our battleground, you know, states and everything, is Texas, because the GOP there said that, you know, that Texas is in danger of turning blue. And if Republicans lose Texas, what does that mean, you know, for the future here? So, I mean, it's something to be concerned about, I think.
Well, particularly when they found 98,000 illegals registered to vote in Texas. Again, that's enough to swing an election. It certainly was enough to make perhaps the Beto versus Cruz race closer. Pennsylvania has found over 11,000 on the voter rolls that are illegally on the rolls. That was a state that was barely won by President Trump. So when you look at not just the shenanigans of how they count the votes or harvest the votes after Election Day, you look at the people who are going in and voting illegally and the refusal of the Democrats to deal with making sure our elections are fair and accurate by requiring things like, well, a photo ID, the same sort of photo ID that you're required to show to get on an airplane, to buy cold medicine at a drugstore, to buy beer or to order a glass of wine at a restaurant. They want it to be easier to vote illegally than it is to go order a glass of wine at a restaurant.
Yeah, that's amazing when you think about it, right? I mean, the opposition that has occurred, and you and I have talked about this for years, the idea that somehow you can't or shouldn't have to prove who you are before you vote. I mean, something as important as voting, after all, it's supposed to be the prime responsibility of a U.S. citizen, is the idea of casting a ballot in an election, and you don't have to prove who you are before you do it. Doesn't make any sense to me.
And you never hear anybody scream from the left, oh, it's racism if I have to show my photo ID to buy a glass of wine at a restaurant, to get cold medicine at a drugstore, to get on an airplane. I got to tell you, I fly a lot. And I have noticed that there are African Americans and Hispanics and people of other races on airplanes. So apparently this idea that only white people are allowed to fly because only white people can get a photo ID.
Doug, you know, you mentioned Texas as and it's not on our list of 17 battleground states yet. I think it won't be there, but you raise a very good point. If you looked at Colorado, which is one of our 17 battleground states, if you looked at Colorado 12 years ago, you'd have said that's a solid red state. Well, the progressive liberals, big money groups, put together what's called the blueprint to turn Colorado blue frankly, Colorado right now, it's not really purple. It's sort of purple blue. There's been a long-term plan to try and make that change. In Texas, it hasn't quite hit the statewide level. You have a Republican governor. You have two Republican senators. Now, Beto O'Rourke, the Democrat, with the Irish heritage, Francis Beto O'Rourke, only lost by 3 points to Ted Cruz, the Hispanic heritage Republican. They're going to try and change it. I don't think they're
going to. Can we call Beto Fospanic? Like fake Spanish.
Love that.
He's Fospanic.
This is why Steve Gill is so unique. Branding. You came up with the other term, the Kardashianization of American culture and politics. Now, I've never heard anybody call Beto O'Rourke Fospanic.
Well, but Steve still hasn't gotten over the fact that Beto was streaming his dental work live on the internet. That's one of those images you can never remove from your mind there.
Well, and again, this is becoming a trend because the new president Bolsonaro of Brazil had to go in for surgery this week. He got attacked in the last days before the presidential campaign in Brazil and was stabbed multiple times. He successfully won, successfully got inaugurated, has begun his administration, but did take a little bit of time off to go in and get surgery to repair all the stab wounds he had. And he did a video hit before he went in, while he's in the hospital gown, while he's in the hospital bed, before he went in for surgery. So I don't want to see where the rest of this thing is going.
We've already talked about the surgeries and medical procedures of political candidates we don't want to ever see live on Facebook. And you can imagine which ones are at the top of the list we don't want to see.
Bernie Sanders is already getting ready to trim his nose hairs and ear hairs live streaming just so we can see the real Bernie. When we come back, we'll talk about the impact of this whole infanticide abortion push that Democrats are pushing in New York and Virginia and Rhode Island and beyond. How does that play in the battleground states, particularly those heavily Catholic, heavily Christian states? How does that swing those states, perhaps, toward the Republicans? We'll talk more about it in a moment. This is the Battleground State Report. We'll be right back.
Ground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
Of course, that's Doug Kellett on air guitar with the intro. Go to Battleground State News on battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook. And, Doug and I both have a lot of connections with and both spent time in Colorado. And it's interesting this week, one other news item before we talk about the impact of this infanticide, late-term, after-birth abortion effort by the Democrats. Colorado this week is moving ahead towards abandoning their electoral votes to go with whatever wins the national populist vote is where our electoral votes will go, not who wins our state. Basically, Colorado wanting to capitulate to New York and California to pick the president for their state. This is, again, the leftist in Colorado, and we're seeing this in other states, doing everything they can to help move the votes to letting California and New York control our country. I don't think most Coloradans are really going to embrace that, Doug.
No, of course not, because after all, it takes it out of the hands of the people of Colorado, right? I mean, yes, the Democrats won the last election by getting, as far as the popular vote, by getting more votes that way, but it's not always going to be that way, right? I mean, there's always another election. I mean, the Republicans have gotten the majority of the popular vote as well as the electoral vote in the past. This one astounds me. It really does. I mean, the idea that you would turn it over to the outcome of the popular vote rather than what the people of Colorado want.
Let me dissent a little bit on that, Doug, and I think there's some demographic changes going on, particularly in California, that it might be the case that there might never, ever again be a Republican presidential candidate who wins a 50% majority of the popular vote, but still we could have Republican presidents for decades to come. And the reason is because California last time around went for Hillary Clinton by 4 million votes, and the popular vote was like Hillary by 2.5 million. So California, all those electoral college votes in California went to the Democrat with the 4 million vote surplus. But if it had been a 4-vote surplus, those votes would have gone to the Democrat. You know, if a Kamala Harris, the senator, the far left senator from California, wins the Democratic nomination, California may go Democrat by 5 million votes this time. And because it's not a battleground state, it won't matter one whit in the outcome of the presidential election.
So you're forecasting that the Republicans, they would never be a candidate, they would have a general appeal enough to win the popular vote, really, even though California is certainly an obstacle? I mean, I would think that it's not out of the realm of possibility, I mean, of Republicans winning. Certainly in the case of Colorado, I wouldn't want to put it up to that, right? I mean, let the people of Colorado vote. They're more likely these days to vote Democrat anyway if you're a Democrat.
But here's what's going on with that. I would say it's not outside the realm of possibility, but it's a diminishing possibility.
No more Reagans? No more possibility of something like that?
The demographics are changing so much, which gets back to the whole border.
But, I mean, are there not persuadable people? That is, just because of certain demographics, that is, Hispanics are never
particularly
going to embrace the idea of limited government or anything like that, Mike?
Particularly when people haven't campaigned in California, because, again, why waste your time, money, and energy, particularly your money, in all these media markets in California if you're a Republican when the numbers are not – I mean, again, winning barely – for the Democrats, doesn't matter whether winning bigly, so to speak. So Republicans don't spend a lot of time campaigning, which is why we lose congressional seats and other seats. So we've lost a base because of the way that that's set. I'm going to disagree on a different reason of why I think Republicans do have a chance to retake the popular vote. I think pretty simply if they would just follow good policy. As we pointed out before, New York State, outside of New York City, Hillary Clinton only won the state by about 740 votes. You take away that inner city vote that is largely focused on issues that do not reflect the rest of their state or the rest of the country. You've got Donald Trump. If he starts picking up an additional 5 points in the black community, starts picking up 10 points more in the Hispanic community, you start changing those numbers pretty dramatically, not just in New York or California. But here's the real push. The votes in California are heavily dependent on the number of illegal aliens who are living there and, in many cases, voting there. If we put in mandatory E-Verify, if we secure the border, and the illegal alien population in the U.S. starts to go away, because if you can't work and if you can't get government benefits, taxpayer-paid benefits, because we're going to use E-Verify to justify whether you're actually legally here, legally obligated, or legally able to work or to get taxpayer benefits, they will go home. You move 5 million illegals out of California, they lose about 8 electoral votes, and you start seeing that the electoral votes in the rest of the country matter a lot more because California gets diminished in terms of the votes that they lose in the electoral college because all those illegal aliens get forced back out of the country.
Doug, I agree, but isn't it possible, guys, if I understand the money issue about, you know, going and campaigning in California, but there are districts in California where actually Republicans, while they may be an endangered species, do reside, right? I mean, can't you drive up the Republican vote more than likely in California? I mean, like you said, right now there's been no incentive to do so, but isn't it possible Republicans are kind of demoralized, so they don't really go vote as much as Democrats do?
Doug, let me revise and extend my comments based upon what Steve just said. And I think if we're able to clean the voter rolls up and get all the illegal aliens off the voter rolls.
And the vote harvesting where they get votes after the election has ended.
And California is a very good example of that because there are now, the Judicial Watch just won a settlement with Los Angeles County. There are 2 million registered voters who are inactive in Los Angeles County. There's 5 million in the state. Now, the Judicial Watch says most of them will be removed because they're illegal aliens and they're inactive. The Secretary of State says, oh, no, no, very few will be removed. We'll see what there's. I think probably the majority of those 5 million inactive voters are illegals. And so, Doug, back to your point, yes, Republicans in California are demoralized because they have no chance now with the way the demographics have changed. And if Judicial Watch is correct that most of these 5 million registered but inactive voters are illegal, and if they are removed, then you would have a chance in California, and you would then have a chance of a Republican winning a majority of the popular vote in the presidential campaign. However, the big if there, Steve, is will these states implement voter registration rules that removes illegal aliens? I think the question, it's an open question right now.
Well, I think that's why the census coming up is so important. That's why the Democrats are fighting so hard to stop a wall. They want the continued flood of illegals that build the population in these states to give them more electoral clout, more congressional seats that, again, you know, Republicans lost a bunch of congressional seats in California this midterm election because they ran inept campaigns, where in Orange County, which is Republican, as Doug was pointed out, we lost like 5 congressional seats in that county alone. You start bringing these back because you take down the vote count, you take down the number of congressional seats in California that they're using because of the large number of illegal aliens that are counting in the census count. You do start, I think, to change things pretty dramatically, pretty quickly. But you've also got to get Republicans to campaign and campaign well. I mean, we lost a seat as Republican conservatives over in South Carolina, where you had a district that was a 20-plus Trump district, and yet you had Mark Sanford, the disgraced, scandal-ridden anti-Trumper, who lost that that primary, who then didn't support the Republican who was running because, you know, the rhinos would rather us lose a seat to Democrats rather than see conservatives win. We've got to clean up the party before we can win some of these seats back.
But for all practical purposes, looking at 2020, California is the presidential candidate will not go. The Republican nominee will not go to campaign or spend any money in California because it's a hopeless cause in 2020 without any change in the registration of illegal aliens there as voters, which brings us back to those 17 states that matter. And the issue that we're going to talk about more in the next segment is all of this embrace of Governor Northam of Virginia, a battleground state, of essentially infanticide. How does that play out?
Well, we've pointed out in past shows, as well as in a column at Battleground State News, that the Catholic vote in Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin really was the difference in 45 electoral votes. Those states moving into the Trump column were the difference. Does this infanticide abortion issue help Trump keep those states or maybe even add another couple into his column? We'll talk about that when we come back in just a moment. Back in. This is the Battleground State Report. As always, BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook, where you'll find links to some of the stories that are going to impact the 2020 election that's already underway as Spartacus Cory Booker throws his beanie into the ring, his toga into the mix. You know, you've got Kamala Harris who's out there running apparently trying to overcome the stories about her sexual exploits with Willie Brown that advanced her career early. I mean, it is a clown car cast of characters that the Democrats are putting out there, and they may have 20 or 30 candidates before we're done.
Yeah, and just to clarify for all our listeners about the Kamala Harris, she's a senator from California who, you know, was made all these false allegations and claims against Brett Kavanaugh. She was on the Judiciary Committee when he was ultimately confirmed. She graduated from the University of California at San Francisco Hastings College of Law. Didn't really have a big job, but she did. She was in her late 20s, late 1980s. And Willie Brown, then, who was almost 60 years old and was this powerful speaker of the Assembly of California, he was married. But he and Kamala Harris were, quote, dating. They were dating. And shortly after they began dating, he appointed her to a very powerful six-figure job on a state commission. That's her. That's the background you're talking
about. What an amazing coincidence that she advanced her career the longer she dated Willie. And then when they stopped dating, she had to do it on her own, so to speak. In any event, the big issue this week that has drawn a ton of attention has been this move towards New York, where they embraced late-term, right till the moment of birth, abortions with pretty much on demand. There is a restriction that says the health of the mother, but that is not defined and can include economic health, mental health, stress perhaps as reason to abort your child as you're in the process of birthing a baby. And then the governor of Virginia, Northam, Democrat governor of Virginia, a pediatrician, by the way, espouses the idea that, well, even after the birth, you can keep the baby comfortable while the mother and the doctor decide whether to kill it. You had a Virginia legislator who was sponsoring the legislation who actually admitted that up till when dilation is occurring, again, where the birth has begun, yeah, you can still, at that late point in the game, decide to kill the baby. She's doubled down. Northam has doubled down on it. The question is, this infanticide effort, this late-term barbaric abortion process, how does that play in these battleground states where you've got strong Catholic populations, strong evangelical populations? And this is an issue that may galvanize voters, even, Doug, in those purple to blue states like a Virginia.
You know, Steve, I listened to that entire interview of the governor with the radio station there. I think it took my breath away. The very idea that somehow the baby could be breathing on its own outside the womb and there's a discussion going on about whether the baby should live. I mean, I think the callous nature of that really shocked me a bit. I mean, I've always, you know, we've debated this over the years about the idea of, you know, freedom of choice, women's right to choose and such, and whether, there ought to, you know, do we know when life begins at conception or does it begin sometime after that? I can understand people who hold those various opinions. I don't hold that opinion, but I do understand people who do. I do not understand anyone who could hold an opinion that it would be okay to have an abortion in the third trimester and certainly have some debate about whether the baby lives after it is already born. I can't imagine. I mean, we should be 100% in this country against that.
Well, that's a Democratic Party that allows people to apparently cast votes and harvest votes after the election. So having an abortion after the birth really kind of is consistent with their ability to blur the lines. I guess we should still refer to this as a fourth trimester abortion.
Yeah.
Now.
But, Steve, it's so barbaric. I mean, partial birth abortion in itself, I mean, years ago when this came up in the Congress, right, there was Democrats and Republicans were pretty much against this, even though there was, you know, there was opposition. Senator Tim Kaine, you know, kind of reacted. He's from Virginia. Like, well, we're not doing that. It was just amazing to me.
They deny it's happening, and yet they're wanting to legislate it to make it legal. If it's not happening,
exactly.
Why do you have to fight so hard to make it legal?
Right. Why should we have to fight for this, though? Right. I mean, this should be. There is a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Right. I mean, that was sort of the mantra of the country when it began. What is more important than the idea of struggling for life once you're born? I mean, and the idea that just before you're born, like you were pointing out. I mean, people don't want to get graphic about some of these details and such, but I mean, what else would you call it? I mean, it's other than infanticide, if the baby is almost born.
Well, especially when you have some of these Democrats screaming that we do not want children ripped from their families at the border. Yeah, okay, you don't want them ripped from their families at the border, but you have no problem ripping them apart as you pull them from the womb of their mother.
Yeah, I heard it said, and I know Mike wants to get in this, but I heard it said, too, on one of the shows, just listening to some of the discussion about this, and I thought it was correct. Media never really asked the people who are in favor of this kind of barbaric act really to challenge them. They never really have them explain to the people, the voters, exactly what they're for on something like this.
Doug, yeah, you mentioned the issue of the infanticide and how it's playing out in the battleground states. The Northam comments, basically supporting infanticide, governor of Virginia, the Democrat governor, came out just the same day, coincidentally, that, and I usually don't cite this as a source, but Brookings Institute released a study which said that really in the battleground states, there are four Midwestern states that are really potentially the states that Democrats could take. This was before the infanticide as the official policy of Democrats came out. And those four states were all states that went for President Trump in 2016. They're Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Now, and as Steve mentioned, those four states have a heavy Catholic population. Now, what's interesting is we don't see necessarily the Catholic hierarchy condemning Virginia Governor Northam supporting infanticide, but
or Catholic Governor Cuomo or the Catholic Governor of Rhode Island, where they're pushing these same policies.
But we see people who are in the pews in these Catholic churches, who the voters, they have very strong feelings about it. And as you pointed out, they've made the difference in 2016. Doug, how does this embrace of infanticide play out with those Catholic voters in those four key Midwestern states?
You know, I think it's always been, you know, people of faith, I think, you know, that you're talking about in those states have always held pro-life views. There are maybe various degrees about the issue of pro-life. I think most Americans do hold the idea that if a woman's life, that is the mother's life, is in danger, that the life of the mother must be spared, that kind of thing. But there are varying degrees of it, I guess. But like is being talked about in Virginia by the governor there, that, again, should be 100% against. So if it becomes an issue in some way, right, I think, it would certainly could play a role in this, because there are a lot of Americans that are very concerned, about the way this is going. I think we've seen with some of the court rulings and everything that maybe there may be where a situation where abortions may be very restrictive or outlawed in one state, but they may be readily available in another. I guess at some point you have to leave it up to the various states here. But I think, I think you're right. I think it certainly can play a role in this. And I think religious freedom, the idea of these issues of I don't know what to call it other than infanticide, as Steve did, they certainly could play a role in it, especially in a close election.
Well, particularly when you look at these four states, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, 45 electoral votes or so shifted, you know, one way or the other based upon those four states. And the vote margin for Trump over Hillary Clinton collectively in those four states, not in each state, but in all four of those states, was only about 140,000 votes.
Yep.
Does this swing more votes towards the Republicans and away from the Democrats in those states, or at least keep them in play when Donald Trump is running for reelection?
And really,
don't you think part of the problem is the uncomfortable nature of trying to describe these procedures like partial birth abortion, or the idea of, what's being, I said, I'm still shocked with the idea that the baby could be breathing outside the womb and we're having a discussion about whether to try to save it. I mean, I don't know. But you think that's part of it? It's just
hard to
discuss.
That's the bridge too far. That's where they've crossed the bridge too far, because you don't have to talk about the graphic terms of an abortion. You can show a freshly born baby being held in a doctor's arms and say, Democrats say, we can kill this child. You can make it very visual without being very graphic. And that's, I think, the key in communications. As we always talk, you have to show people, not just tell people. And when you show a newborn baby and say Democrat policies would allow them to kill this child, that's what people will understand. We'll talk more about it in a moment, and whether or not Republicans will step up and communicate that message when we come back for more of the Battleground State Report.
Battleground State Report.
And welcome in. This is the Battleground State Report. As always, go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, battlegroundstatenews.com, and Battleground State News on Facebook as well. Guys, in just the last week, we've had more Democrats announce that they're running for president of the United States, including the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, a town of 100,000 people, who is running on the platform that he's gay and he's married to a man. You've got Kamala Harris, who's at least a U.S. senator, although she hasn't done much, kind of like Barack Obama, who was only 2 years into his term as a U.S. senator when he ran for president of the United States. You got Cory Booker, who announced just as we headed into the weekend. You may see 20, 25, 30 people throwing their hat in the ring. By the way, one porn star has already dropped out of the race. She decided that the Stormy Daniels stuff was just, you know, conflicting with her message. So she's dropped out already, but she is still doing the strip tour and the book tour that she's hoping will put money into her, well, I guess, G-string instead of her pockets would be the appropriate way to put
that.
Yeah,
give me that info when you can. Really?
Yeah, there you go. So, hey, Doug, so I'm looking at this list of announced candidates on the Democratic side, and, you know, there's this spiritual healer, Marianne Williamson from Hollywood. She's announced. There's Cory Spartacus Booker from New Jersey and Stanford University. There's Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii. There's Kamala Harris from California, who went to high school in Canada. Kirsten Gillibrand from New York. Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas.
Hold on, wait, let me get me a beer.
Let me get me a beer from Massachusetts. To me, none of those have any appeal of significance to the middle-of-the-road independent Reagan Democrats in the Midwest. But there is one who's kind of not even quite announced yet. It's doing a listening tour, Sherrod Brown of Ohio.
Yeah, Sherrod Brown, the newly reelected senator in Ohio, he was the one that noted that on his working tour, again, I think he's, you know,
yes.
The idea that he's going to appeal to Democrats who want to work is going to put him, you know, kind of behind the curveball. Second, he was the one that was announcing that, you know, he wants to make sure that we're not ripping children from their families at the border, but doesn't have any problem apparently with ripping children out of the wombs of their mother. And then you got Joe Biden, who's circling around out there. You've got Bernie Sanders, who is still getting his campaign ready. And then the other big news of the week is the not Democrat candidate,
yes,
who's running. Again, by also Michael Bloomberg, another one that I think will end up getting in the race, simply because he's looking at the far left crazies in the Democratic primary process and figuring that, you know, only half the Democrats are that crazy, and they can all divide up that half and he'll go get the other half. Michael Bloomberg has the money and I think would be a significant player in a Democrat primary. But you've got Howard Schultz, the CEO or former CEO of Starbucks, who has caused just absolute panic on the left, figuring that if he runs as an independent, as he's saying he's going to do, runs in favor of the capitalistic free market system, runs in favor of people keeping their private health insurance, that he's going to simply take enough votes from the Democrats to reelect Donald Trump. So they're threatening to boycott Starbucks. I just want to point out, I went to Starbucks this week twice just to try to balance out the liberals who are boycotting it, to keep them afloat and keep the money flowing into Howard so he can run for president.
You know, I was thinking, Steve, when you said that, here's a Democrat, right, lifelong Democrat, who is a capitalist, who believes in the free market system. Should we put him behind a glass so we can kind of observe him?
The last of a kind.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, we just don't hear that very often here. But, you know, some people are saying, he ought to run maybe as a Republican against Donald Trump rather than a Democrat in the primary because of that. Huh?
The good thing is, as a candidate, he won't need Secret Service protection, because I think he'll qualify for Environmental Protection Agency endangered species protection.
But he's running as an independent. I like the idea, Steve. He would have a better chance if he ran as a Republican. Now, most of his social policies are far left, but he had some dopey.
There is a path, though, as an independent. If in fact President Trump is getting 80% of the Republican primary support still, or 70%, his approval ratings nationally, again, these are the same polls that said he couldn't beat Hillary Clinton. But assuming he's in that 43-45% approval rating, which is still at about the same point or higher than Barack Obama was at this stage in his service as president, If Trump is around 35 or 40%, and you have an independent that pulls a little off of him and a lot off of whoever the Democratic candidate is, you could have a three-way 33-34-35 split that, you know, or approximately that somebody wins with about 35% of the vote, but gets it in the right electoral places to win.
But there's a little twist here. Little twist. Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with the premise, but I want to go with this for a second.
Keep in mind, though, he would win the popular vote with 35. The key is where Schultz would win.
Yes.
He would fall short of the numbers necessary for an electoral win, but would the Democrat states vote for him electorally versus Trump? I don't think there's any question.
Well, but here's the thing, though. Then you get into the issue of faithless elector. Right. If let's say, but the way this would play out, first you'd have to find out which states an independent candidacy of Howard Schultz would he could win. You know, I don't know which states he could win. You know, the blue states are probably going to be blue.
Just look at where the Starbucks franchises are.
every place,
everywhere.
I'm not even sure of the battleground states. But let's just go. I don't know if he could even win a single state, but. Let's say he does win a sufficient number of electoral college votes to keep either the Republican candidate, President Trump, or the Democratic candidate from getting a majority, getting to 270 of the 538 electoral college votes. You know who decides the president then?
The House of Representatives with Nancy Pelosi.
So there you go.
Okay, now you guys are scaring me. I was okay until that. I wasn't thinking that because I'm, you know, in my lifetime, and I guess both of you, yours as well. The you know, George Wallace got what, the 4 or 5 states electoral votes back in 1968.
I don't think Perot won any, did he? I mean, Perot
no, he got
votes,
20% of the vote, but yeah, he didn't get any electoral votes. Yeah.
But see, here's the thing, Doug. Historically, you know. That in 1824, in the presidential election of 1824, when John Quincy Adams ran against, because you were back there.
I covered the election.
You covered it. John Quincy Adams ran against really the first Democratic candidate, Andrew Jackson, and it was the first time we really had more popular suffrage where you just didn't have to be a landowner to vote. I was still all men, but Jackson, from what we can tell, won the popular vote. Neither had an electoral college vote victory. It went to the House of Representatives, and the House picked John Quincy Adams as president. That was the last time we had this episode. Now, what the interesting twist on this, and this is back to California, and how could California become relevant? If Howard Schultz decides to run for president as an independent, and there's some possibility that he could win electoral college votes and deny either candidate a majority, then it matters. Then President Trump might go to California and campaign so that he could win back those 5 or 6 Republican districts so that we get a Republican House.
Well, also, I mean, Bill Clinton never got over 50% of the vote and yet got the electoral votes because
right.
Ross Perot took votes mainly away from George Bush. Not enough to get electoral votes, but enough to change the dynamic in key states.
Exactly.
What's panicking the Democrats is that Schultz – forget the electoral votes or the House votes in California. If Schultz pulls enough that he divides the Democrat votes and the into his pack and whatever the Democrat nominee is, Donald Trump could win California with 40% of the vote and get all of the electoral votes and have an electoral landslide. That's what's panicking the Democrats.
That.
Is not only are there places where Schultz could win, but are there places where Schultz would move states that should be Democrat into Trump's column.
Let me give you 4, Doug, and tell me what
that's
you
why
think.
I'm buying Starbucks.
Yeah, there you go. I'll give you 4 battleground states that an independent Howard Schultz candidacy could mean a Donald Trump victory. At Minnesota. President Trump lost by 40,000 votes. Now, Minnesota's kind of crazy, far left, but there's a solid 40-45% Republican vote. They're not going to leave Trump. They're so crazy in Minnesota, you know, they could split between the whoever.
You pull off 50,000 votes, Trump wins Minnesota.
Virginia, which right now is probably we list it as a battleground state, but it's probably a blue state.
Schultz would appeal to Northern Virginia.
Yeah, absolutely. New Hampshire and Maine.
I'd add Nevada. Again, relatively close.
Okay.
I think you might even look at New Mexico as places where Schultz would pull just enough from the Democrats. And again, I'm not sure that he wouldn't pull just enough from the Democrats in California to maybe give Trump a win there. Again, outside of New York City, and again, you got a lot of these wealthy New Yorkers that vote for Hillary Clinton, vote for the Democrats. But when they're hearing 70 to 90% tax rates coming from the left, and you got Schultz running as a businessman who will govern in a reasonable way, maybe you see the Democrats in New York City go in the direction of Schultz, which puts New York in play.
What do you think, Doug?
The only thing I could say, you guys are the vote counters. You looked at this and studied it and everything. But is it possible that Schultz could also pull some votes from those who voted for Trump? Because I keep thinking there's a fairly large number out there of people who voted for Trump, especially in the Midwest, you know, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, that just could not cast a ballot. They normally vote Democrat, but they couldn't cast a ballot for Hillary Clinton. And they don't really like Donald Trump that much and might go for an alternative of a business guy who maybe sides with them on some other issues. What do you think? Is it possible?
I think he pulls some from Trump. I think he probably pulls more from the Democrats, which is why they're panicking. And there's always the doctrine of unintended consequences where Republicans may think, oh, yeah, it's great if this guy runs. And then you realize, oh, yeah, he is taking some from our column, too.
So, Doug.
Well, it's just possible, I guess. I mean, because, you know, people are so dissatisfied, it seems to me, about both parties these days. And the idea, or at least the argument, is whether they carry it out when they go to vote, that the Democrats are extreme this way, the Republicans are extreme in the other direction, and that maybe there's enough dissatisfaction that an independent actually might be able to do something that we, you know, normally would discount this.
You raise a very good point, and we will be beginning to do battleground state report polling in these battleground states, and that will be a critical question that we'll want to answer.
I think the other interesting thing with Schultz is, does he actually go all in and actually run? I mean, he's getting such backlash on the Democratic side, on the left.
He's
but at the same time,
now.
This is a guy who's got a large, you know, remember that reset button that Hillary Clinton presented to the Russians, the big red button? Schultz has a huge I don't care button because he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't care what you're saying about me. I know who I am. I'm comfortable with who I am. I came from nothing. I mean, this guy is a guy that grew up in government housing and has become, you know, wealthy, going up through the ranks of business and then creating his own business. I think this is a guy who's got a huge I don't care button, and I'm not sure they can bully him out of the race, but they may try to, and it may or may not be effective. We got plenty to talk about in the months and weeks ahead. In the meantime, go to battlegroundstatenews.com, battlegroundstatenews.com. Go to Battleground State News on Facebook as well. Doug Kellett, Michael Patrick Leahy, Steve Gill here with you each weekend with the Battleground State Report. Spread the word, tell your friends, and be here with us next weekend at the same time.